Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
And good afternoon, and it's another beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest, and you're listening to the Boz Knows Show, and I'm your host, Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner, and we're coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, Oregon, and it's another great day here. Sun's out right now. Of course, it's been cloudy most of the day. As soon as I have to come inside and get on the radio, here comes the sun. So just one of those days. And you know, it's just been a really interesting week, for me, as a commissioner. And, it just, you know, I'll touch on this early in the program, and then I'm going to get away from it because I really don't want to dwell on this, but, EPD finally kind of identified, out to people what's been going on in the background, which is the commissioners have gotten repeated threats from somebody associated with the aerial spray initiative ban on our lives, threats of violence basically, and that's kind of been going on for a good while now, almost 2 months, and adds a little bit extra stress to the life, adds a little bit extra stress to the spouse. And this Tuesday, in our board meeting, those folks chose to basically shut our meeting down after public comment. And if people wondered why we got up and left the room and why I left in such a hurry, that was one of the reasons. I can't say much more than that about it. But I would suggest folks just look at the Register Guard or KZI or one of their other favorite news outlets. They probably have the EPD's press release up there. They're looking for information on anyone that might have any knowledge about, that might help them figure out who's actually been making these threats. So just have to acknowledge that's out there. And it's one of those things about being a public official. I haven't canceled any public appointments yet. Over this, because I refuse to let it dictate my schedule in life, and I move onward and upward from there, and hopefully they'll figure out who's behind this and take appropriate actions. But if you're wondering why we still are doing metal detectors and having an armed security guard at board meetings, that's why. So moving on, though, there's been other things going on around the county. And one of those things is I have the opportunity, you know, as a commissioner, I get asked to speak to various civic organizations that, you know, meet, you know, once a month or every other week or something. They're always looking for somebody to talk to them for 20 minutes about something. So I get invited to Lions Clubs and Rotaries. And this tomorrow evening at 6:00, I'll be speaking to the Goldson Grange out on Highway 36 near the intersection of Poodle Creek. And I get to talk to them a little bit about farming in Lane County, the interaction between farming and the county government, and just what we're doing to promote farming, to protect farmlands, and to help grow our food economy here in Lane County, which benefits the farmers. And as I've been thinking about what I'm going to say to that group and looking into doing a little research and all, it's really pretty amazing how much interaction there is. And it's also pretty amazing how much agricultural means to Lane County. You know, there are over 2,600 farms in Lane County. That's a lot of farms. And then the sales of farm products in Lane County is over $142 million a year. And if you group ag and forestry in together, there's 9,000 direct jobs in the ag and forestry industries in Lane County, and thousands, if not tens of thousands, indirect jobs created through those industries. It's a major driver in Lane County's economy, because, you know, you think about 9,000 jobs, there's only 300 and about 65,000 people here. Next census is coming up. That's been in the news a little bit. But 375,000. You think about the adult population that's of working age, that's not retired, that's not too young to work. That trims that down by quite a bit. 9,000 is a big piece of that. And if you start adding the indirect jobs, it's really a big piece of our economy and jobs here in Lane County. So ag is really important. And, you know, what's really kind of cool is I just got, you know, getting back to a little bit of politics, I just got the endorsement of the Lane County Farm Bureau on Monday night. So I feel really pleased about that, to be supported by local farmers as I go into talking about farming. Now, one of the things about the Grange is it's really not a political event, it's informational. I'm going to be trying to convey a lot of information about, you know, how Lane County has helped farms. But it's been pretty interesting. There's, you know, several ways and several things we interact with farms, and particularly one of the biggest places we interact with the farmers in our land use laws. And as you look at the land use goals of the state of Oregon, preserving farmland is one of the highest goals in that, and that's why it's called a resource land. And when we have adopted our comprehensive plan in Lane County, forestry and farmlands are considered resource lands, and the residential, commercial, and industrial that are outside of urban growth boundaries or city limits, they're considered exception lands. They're there by exception because they were there before the land use laws were passed and are not the intent of that area outside of urban growth boundaries. So, you know, that there's that strong protection of agricultural lands in the state of Oregon, and Lane County's comprehensive plan, land use plan, reflects that, in that non-ag and forestry lands are considered an exception. So that's how, you know, the starting point for land use for agriculture, which sometimes creates issues, because the idea is to try and protect these farms and particularly high value farm soils from being developed into other uses, particularly commercial use or residential use, where they just won't exist as farms and may never exist as farms. If they get paved over, you just lose the value of that soil. So it's really an important aspect of the background of that land use law. So a lot of the rules for exclusive farm use zoning in Lane County are intended to prevent conversion of those ag lands into commercial or into residential use. So it's very difficult to get a dwelling approved on EFU land unless you earn a certain amount of money from that land and you're actually the one farming that land. And that's, you know, a pretty high test. One of the interesting things was when marijuana was legalized, because it's such a high value cash crop, it was excluded from the income testing for dwellings because they were worried that you could go out and get a fairly small piece of EFU land and qualify for a dwelling, because it doesn't take a whole lot of marijuana to make the $80,000 a year of ag income that you have to have to qualify for a dwelling. Whereas if you're growing other crops, it's pretty tough to do that, to get up to $80,000 a year of income. So the land use laws are set up to try and prevent that misuse and redevelopment of land, which has led to some interesting aspects of conflict as farmers in this newer economy and things change over time are trying to survive, you know, with, you know, higher labor rates that have been created over the years, the lack of the next generation coming up to take over the family farm, all those various issues that are challenges to farmers, you know, the high cost of fuel and fertilizer and everything else, the low margins on crops, the vagaries of the weather and whether you got a good crop. And if you've got a good crop, it seems like everybody else in the world had a good crop that year, so the prices fall, you know, and just all the things that happen when you're growing a commodity. For those farmers, it makes it tough to survive. So farmers are looking to diversify and specialize, maybe add value to their product and sell directly to the public. And one of the places that ag has done that very successfully is in the winery industry. And what you see was a lot of wineries that were starting to open tasting rooms. Well, of course, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission wants anyone that's offering alcohol for tasting to have food available so that folks don't end up blotto, you know, by drinking all these tastes on an empty stomach. So, you know, the wineries thought, oh, okay, well, we'll serve some food, but we're going to charge for that food. And as they started getting into more than just cheese and crackers, they ran afoul of a lot of the land use laws, because serving prepared food on a farm is not selling a farm product, you know, like doing a wine tasting and selling the actual bottles of wine that were produced on that, at that winery. So they, you know, and probably the poster child for that was King Estates with their restaurant that they set up, which was a pretty major, what you would consider a commercial operation, but as big as the winery is, it kind of was at the same scale as, say, a smaller winery like Pfeiffer, that's pretty small, and their size tasting room, where they don't really offer, you know, they might offer cheese and olive plates or something like that and not necessarily prepared food, so they don't quite run into that problem. So King Estates ran into this issue. So Lane County, in, you know, with the help of King Estates, worked with a couple legislatures and got a bill written that carved out an exception for wineries to actually serve food, and wineries of a certain size to actually have a restaurant. And it was basically the King Estate Bill, as we called it, back in 2011. And that's what actually opened the door to a lot of these wineries and tasting rooms. And now you can go lots of places, and you know, Benton Lane, and they serve pizza on certain nights. You can go to Bennett Vineyards out there on Territorial Highway, and they serve food there. So that's really what happened because of that bill that we got passed in 2011 that Lane County was very instrumental in lobbying for and successful in getting it through. And I want to thank, believe it or not, Senator Floyd Prozanski for his efforts in helping get that through. He was one of the people that was instrumental in ushering that through the Senate side, along with Val Hoyle and some other folks on the House side at the time. Paul Holvey, Representative Paul Holvey also. So that's kind of a little bit of background. Now, fast forward to this year, or last year, I guess some of it hangs over, and Agrarian Ales sees this opportunity to, you know, they've been growing hops and organic hops at that, and been getting quite a name for them, and their agrarian brewery is making some great beers, and they decide they're going to open a tasting room out at their farm. And of course, same thing, Oregon Liquor Control Commission says you need to serve food. So they started doing food, and they they kind of had some other issues in that they started doing it in a building that was not intended for public occupancy, heated it with some unsafe heating devices, and got busted for some fire and life safety issues. But they were still in violation of, they weren't a farm stand. They were actually operating more like a restaurant, but they're not a winery, so they don't fit that exception. So they got caught in that, you know, trying to add value and direct market their product, and they couldn't quite do it, and are sitting in this legal limbo right now of waiting for a change in the state land use laws that'll provide a door for them to get through in a special exception process. And then what happened more recently is I found out that there's a local farm stand that sells flour and other products like that from the grains they grow on their property and from their associated mill. While they're okay selling the flour, what they can't sell is bread baked from that flour or cookies or brownies or anything else, because that's considered prepared food and it runs them afoul of that law. Now, mind you, if they were growing strawberries on their property and they made strawberry preserves and sold them at their farm stand, that would be okay. That's how picky the law sort of gets the definition between processed farm produce and prepared food. Baking bread is considered prepared food. So, and making strawberry preserves is processing food under the law right now. So we need to kind of get in there and have a similar effort to 2011 during the 2019 legislative session. And Lane County is going to work together with these two farm entities and other folks from the Farm Bureau work to try and provide a little bit more flexibility and try and do it in a way that it kind of, we won't have the next agrarian or Camas Country Bakery come along that runs afoul of this because somebody else thinks of some new way of marketing their local farm product with added value. Whether it might be some hazelnut farmer that's going to sell direct hazelnut butter products and might actually want to serve it on Camas Country's bread or something like that, bake their bread at their facility. That, you know, we don't want to have to go back and then start carving out one for hazelnut growers. And then when somebody else comes along and says, oh, I got this. Yeah, and we, you know, it's like we need to provide flexibility to let these farmers in their farm stands and in this burgeoning, what I would almost call agritourism, farm to table agritourism that's going on out there, have some ability and flexibility. And that's, you know, just one way Lane County gets involved with the farmers. Is one in protecting their land from development, but also we need to help them in a newer economy provide ways to develop income through direct sales. And that's really hopefully where we'll be after the 2019 session. A little bit of help from a few key legislators up there to help draft some legislation and to sign on as sponsors, and we'll get it through. It doesn't hurt if you, the listeners of the Bo's Nose Show, give them a call and tell them you want to have that flexibility so Agrarian Ales can reopen their tasting room and so the Camas Country Bakery can become legal and know that they can't be shut down at a moment's notice if somebody complains. But speaking of calling, I think I forgot to give out our phone number at the top of the show, which is 646-721-9887. Just press 1 and let Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887. And just press 1, lets us know you want to get in on the air because I want to talk about what you want to talk about. Today, I've kind of got ag on the mind and farming and food, and I've got some more to talk about with that. But you might have something completely different you want to talk about. Give me a call. Again, 646-721-9887. Don't forget to press 1. Let us know you want to talk instead of just listen. talked a little bit about land use and those aspects of what we're doing in Lane County. The other thing we do is we also even provide some video lottery economic development money to some of these burgeoning farm-to-table industries. In fact, Camas Country Mill got nearly $100,000 in that video lottery money to purchase their first milling equipment. And when they were first starting out, way back in 2010 and 11, about that time, in fact, one of the first things I got to do almost as a new county commissioner, I think in the summer of 2011, was to go to their grand opening of their facility. And in fact, they outgrew that facility in up there in the Prairie Road neighborhood, and they've moved to West Eugene now. So they moved out of my district and into Pat Farr's district. And they actually now have a facility up near Everett, I think, Washington. So they're really a growing concern, so to speak. But that's one of those things where they saw this issue after the recession, the 2008 recession, particularly that was real estate involved, and what that did to the grass seed farmers of the Willamette Valley, where without that burgeoning single family home being developed all over the country, there wasn't a real heavy market for grass seed at that time. So the grass seed market kind of fell apart. So Tom Hunton and his family saw that and said, you know what? Maybe there's other grains other than grass seed, because grass seed's a grain. Farmers could be growing here in the Willamette Valley and be selling and making, you know, a living off of. The only problem was is there wasn't any sort of end user for that grain here. So he developed Camas Country Mill and specialized in some grains that grow well here in the Willamette Valley versus trying to compete with Nebraska for wheat is not really what we want to be doing. Or even Eastern Oregon for wheat. They're looking at some, you know, hard red wheat and some very specialty grains is what they're having grown here, and that's what they're milling, and that specialty flours that come with that, and particularly, you know, doing some of them that are organic and everything. It's actually gotten to be such a high end product. They're going to, you know, being sold in some of the high end stores. Like Whole Foods and Market of Choice, you know, that's where you'll see some of their flour. So that's just one little piece where we helped out Camas Country Mill, which was just about developing an end market for farmers. In addition, we helped out in about 2013. It wasn't a real big grant, only $60,000, but we bought equipment to expand a growing little organic food producer here in the Elmira area called Sweet Creek Foods. And they were doing, you know, preserves and pickles and stuff like that, particularly as an organic product. And you know, and that helped them employ about six people. You know, so those are so sort of the indirect jobs to ag. You know, Camas Country Mill, when we first gave them that 100,000, they were going to employ eight people. I think they're well beyond eight people now. I don't know where Sweet Creek Foods is with their total employee count, but just that little expansion we helped them with helped them hire an additional six people. And of course, that's they're buying from the local organic farmers, and that provides that end user for that farm product. But in general, you know, we've been really trying to promote food and the food industry here in Lane County. We have some various sectors we've been trying to target with our economic development money. And food is definitely one of those sectors. In fact, there's a countywide coordinator for the food industry sector now that was hired originally with some economic development money and is being funded with various consortium of funds. But as we look at some of what we've done with that video lottery money, I can go down some of the companies that you might recognize: Glory Bee Foods, Hummingbird, Ninkasi, Oakshire Brewing. We If you guys are familiar with Sprout over there in Springfield, we actually gave money to NEGCO that helped them buy equipment for that commercial kitchen, which has helped start multiple small food companies here in the local area. That's kind of the entrepreneur's starting place. If you're thinking about doing a food company, that's a great way to get started is working through NEGCO and Sprout. So we helped get that going. We actually helped Cosmos Creations up there in Junction City. And right now we're involved in helping with grain millers and the new granola bar factory up there in Junction City. So all this, these places where we're, you know, assisting and trying to work things out, and just in the whole industry, it's just pretty amazing. And we've got some great infrastructure for the food industry here in Lane County. It's a big part of our economy. So that's not in that 9,000 jobs I was talking about. Those 9,000 jobs are in direct jobs on the farm, out in the forest, in the mills, so to speak. It's not some of these jobs in some of these production facilities necessarily. So it's really a big piece of Lane County's economy is tied to food, believe it or not. And don't get me started on the restaurant side and how much of our economy is also just in the restaurant tourism side that comes with that. You know, and part of having that strong ag and food industry, it does really assist our tourism industry, which is a huge piece of Lane County's economy. So those are just a few things that happen around county government that deals with ag and promoting that industry. You know, we have, one of the things that's kind of interesting is the Lane County Historical Museum, which some people may not be too familiar with and have had a chance to go to. I encourage everyone to try and get there once in a while. But they've had multiple exhibits that highlight Lane County Ag and the history of agriculture here in Lane County. I think they had an exhibit for a while about the town of Cresswell when it was basically the fruit growing capital of the Willamette Valley, and known for that. And just some of the food industry that's been in and out of Lane County. And that's really interesting because Lane County funds the Historic Museum. You know, one of the things people don't understand probably in the background is we collect transient room taxes on behalf of the hotel industry and all that come into Lane County, and we distribute that back out. There's a portion of it set aside for promoting museums because that's part of promoting tourism. And the majority of that percentage that goes to museums goes to the Lane County Historic Museum. We're one of the major funders of that. So as you get there and see some exhibit that's on forestry or farming and the history of Lane County, that's, actually tourism dollars that are funding those exhibits. So it's not really coming straight from, it's not competing with the sheriff's office, and it's not competing with any other place in our budget. It's coming out of those tourism dollars that are being collected from folks that are staying in hotels and bed and breakfasts and Airbnb and whatever else that are from out of the area. And they're actually supporting those museum activities. So a very roundabout way we support ag is just supporting the county museum that keeps track of the history of ag here, which is kind of important always to remember our history. And it's kind of interesting because Lane County really grew up on ag and forestry. Those were the biggest industries for the longest time in this area. Some of the industries that we focus on now with our economic development, we do have several other sectors that we're after, like advanced manufacturing, the tech industry sector, which we now have a tech industry person, Matt Sayre, that is promoting that. And we're promoting the Silicon Shire, the work we've done with our economic development money to finish up the middle mile in broadband. You know, that's new. That's new economy to Lane County. Even how dominant the University of Oregon is to Lane County's economy is a relatively modern era piece of our economy. You know, really, we were ag and forest for the longest time, and a little bit of fisheries too. You know, there was a salmon cannery in Florence at one point. So I'm really proud to have the Lane County Farm Bureau endorsement. You know, one of the things, you know, people may not know about me is my actual degree in engineering is in agricultural engineering, not civil engineering. I ended up working as a civil engineer mostly because at the time I graduated from school, the ag industry was in deep, deep trouble in 1981. Folks that are as old as I am probably remember Willie Nelson and Farm Aid concerts. The farmers were in trouble in 1981, and any company that was selling equipment to farmers was in trouble. It was very difficult to find a job in my field, and ended up working as a civil engineer out of college, and then that's just kind of where I stayed, was in the civil engineering field. My degree is ag, and my heart have always been in farming in some ways. I always kind of pictured myself as eventually purchasing a farm and becoming a farmer at one point, but never quite got there. The most I got is about an acre and a half here. I do grow some great tomatoes in the summertime and some cucumbers and, you know, a few of my own products here. And I've got a small orchard in my backyard where I've got apple trees and cherry trees and even have a nectarine tree that produced last year. So I dabble in it, but I can't say I'm a farmer because, boy, I tell you, farmers work. They work hard. You know, and going to the Lane County Farm Bureau meeting the other day, there was a couple of them there. You could just tell were dog tired because they'd been out since before sunup and whatever. One of the gentlemen there was sunburned because it just happened to be a sunny day that day. And you could tell he'd just been out in the field all day and got a little too much sun. And those guys are some hardworking folks, and they're working on a small margin. And whatever the county can do to support ag and Lane County, I'm there all the way. So that was a rather rambling. Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
In there, you forgot one other thing on your list about your property.
What's that?
Your livestock.
Oh, yeah, I do have some livestock here that I actually, and I'm not counting my four poodles as livestock or my cat. I actually have a flock of ducks that I keep for their eggs, and also the fact that ducks eat slugs and snails, and they help me grow my tomatoes because I don't have slugs and snails in my garden, and they don't scratch up your garden as much as chickens. So I'm partial to having duck eggs versus chicken eggs. I like the taste of duck eggs too. They're great for baking, much more dense and all that as far as the consistency of the egg white and the egg yolk, and so that when you bake with it, you get a much moister and much more structured baked good out of it. So like I said, I'm a bit of a farmer at heart. Not quite there, but almost there. Yeah, the ducks are fun, and it's surprising how much personality a duck has.
Well, that being a poodle farmer too, you know.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and the poodles learn very fast to leave the ducks alone. Even the cat doesn't mess with the ducks. But the ducks are curious little things. If I'm in there weeding the garden, eventually they'll be gathered around giving me the eye one at a time because they kind of turn their head from side to side looking at you, waiting for me to find a worm and throw it to them. And so they're pretty tame and they're pretty fun. And it's kind of like, you know, they talk about aquariums make people relax because of the random movement of the fish in the aquarium. Watching a flock of ducks or a flock of chickens in your yard is about the same thing. That kind of random movement. It's very zen. So I can recommend having ducks to anybody if you know, if you've got a little bit of a yard and you got to have water for them. That's a big thing, is they got to have some, you know, something they can bathe in, a pond of some kind, or you know, a trough or something, which has to be changed constantly because they will dirty the water up something fierce. And that's the big thing. They take a fair amount of water. So if you don't have the water for them, don't get ducks. And that's today's Farming Minute for this Wednesday on the Bo's Nose Show. But if you have any questions about ducks or anything else you want to talk about on the Bo's Nose Show, give me a call, 646-721-9887. We'll have a conversation. Just press 1 and let's Robin know you want to get in on the conversation. Again, 646-721-9887. And just press 1. That gets you in here, and we'll have a conversation. We can talk about ducks. We can talk about poodles. We can talk about farming. We talk about the Granges, and just, you know, what's interesting, and one of the reasons why I agreed to speak at the Grange was, you know, hopefully so they draw some people in there to find out about the Grange, because they're going to have a meeting afterwards at 7 o'clock that people are welcome to stay for, is Granges are having trouble surviving now. As people move into town, and you know, Granges were part of the ag community and are very strong in Oregon. And what's interesting is they're also very strong in Delaware, where my wife's family is from, to the point where her dad was the master of the Delaware State Grange for a while. And what's interesting is the master of the Delaware State Grange, it automatically sits as a trustee to the University of Delaware, because University of Delaware was a land grant ag college originally. So that was set up in their original the land grant activities that set up the university. So as he was state master of the Grange, he became a trustee to the University of Delaware at the same time that David McCullough was a trustee. So David McCullough, that, you know, wrote 1776 and John Adams and a few other books you might be familiar with. And I was fortunate enough at that time, he just was coming out with 1776, that Elizabeth's dad gave me a signed copy of that book. So just random thought blew in my mind. Sorry, got off track. We were talking about Granges and how they're having trouble surviving. It's partly just the demographics. One farm, you know, a lot of automation in farms has led to a depopulation of rural communities in some ways, and the aging of the farm community. You know, one of the concerns in America is just how old the average age of farmers has become and how important it is to get the next generation into farming. And, you know, this is kind of no different than as we see some of our medical profession starting to age out, and are we replacing them fast enough with the growing population? We see it now, right now, with our law enforcement officers, that they're starting to age out. We've got this silver wave coming, and it's coming in the farm population too, but that impacts membership at these Granges. So I'm hoping that my appearance out there at the Goldson Grange will be a good thing for that Grange and Granges in general, and help them build their membership, because they're kind of an important piece of rural Oregon. And you'll see the Grange Hall has kind of become the gathering place for communities, whether it's the Lorraine Grange down in Lorraine, or it's, you know, the Long Tom Grange out there that's famous for the Daffodil Festival and a certain calendar they put out a few years back. You know, Granges are important, and an important piece of our community and fabric of our community here in Oregon and Lane County, and I really hope that I can help promote the Grange a little bit and help them out tomorrow night, and also maybe provide them with a little bit of insight as to, you know, what Lane County does to help promote agriculture and the food industry, and answer some questions around that and anything else that comes up tomorrow night, because I think they're gonna, you know, I'll talk for a little while and then it'll be open to questions from the audience. So, and it's not a political event. This is just me speaking as a commissioner to the Grange, because the Grange, I want to respect them. They don't really do politics. So if you do decide to come out to Goldson Grange tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, you might want to come a little bit early. They're doing a potluck community dinner. So if you got your favorite dish you want to bring, but I don't think it's required, the meeting's free. It's open to the public. And then they'll start their regular Grange meeting at 7 if you want to stay and find out a little bit more about what Granges are all about. So that's tomorrow night, Thursday, 6 o'clock, Goldson Grange. It's on Highway 36, just a little bit to the east of the intersection of Poodle Creek Road. Boy, yeah, and I have to say, one of the things that sold Elizabeth and I on moving here was we were looking to move here maybe, and we took a trip from Eugene out to the coast, and we drove past Poodle Creek Road, and we said, that's it. They know we're supposed to live here. There's a Poodle Creek. sorry, I digress again. So that's a lot about ag. And I want to talk about what you want to talk about. So if you're listening out there on the Bo's Nose Show, you got a question, you got a topic you want to find out a little bit more about, or if you've got something you want to tell me you think I ought to know about, 646-721-9887. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about here on the Bo's Nose Show. Something else that came up at the board meeting this week, besides having our meeting shut down by activists and special interest groups, was, you know, did probably flew under most people's radars, but we actually supported a grant that's being applied for to do some planning work to finish up the Oregon Coast Trail. You know, as I was talking about agritourism and tourism and how important that is to our economy, it's really important to the coastal economy right now, as they've lost a lot of timber jobs, all those closed mills down there between Mapleton and Florence along 126. And those of you that actually travel Highway 36 know there's a few more that aren't up to speed up to the other side of Mapleton. That economy is really taking a hit down there and really is living on tourism for the most part. And the Oregon Coast Trail is a trail that goes from California to Washington that basically follows the coastline. The only problem is only parts of it are complete. There's gaps in it all along the Oregon coast. And those gaps are filled by having people detour and use Highway 101. Now, most of you that have ever driven the coast realize that Highway 101 is probably not the most fun pedestrian experience for folks that want to hike from California to Washington. So the idea of an effort came about through the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association and the Association of Oregon Counties. Again, this is another one of those things that's a collaborative effort of many organizations, and through a piece of legislation that they pushed through in the last session, was to close the gaps and to look into closing those gaps. And phase one of that work has started, and this grant would fund phase two, which would be some serious planning of some of these missing pieces. And several of those missing pieces are in Lane County. So if we could finish that trail, it would be one of those trails that would be known nationally. I mean, we all know how beautiful the Oregon coast is. Can you imagine being able to walk from California to Oregon if you didn't, without having to use Highway 101 as part of that? You know, as a hiker and a camper from my teenage years that did a good piece of the Appalachian Trail, I did the whole length of the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal Trail, what they call a CNO Canal, that runs parallel to the Potomac River. You know, I always enjoyed that you know, backpacking and camping along the way, especially a good trail system. The Oregon Coast Trail would just be spectacular to be able to hike along some of those rugged cliffs and on in along some of those sandy beaches, not have to maybe use Highway 101 for pieces of that. What a draw that would be, and just another thing to promote for our tourism economy. So we actually approved a motion on Tuesday for me to sign the forms that make us part of that support for that grant from the Federal Land Access Program, better off known as a FLAP grant, which we've actually used before and successfully before in Lane County. It's actually what helped rebuild the rock wall there close to the Sea Lion Caves, an historic rock wall, and kept it in the same format that was as it was done by the CCC in the 30s. It's really hopeful that this will fit that grant program really, really well, and we'll be able to move on with trying to finish those pieces as the Oregon Beach Bill turned 50. That's how we justified some of the grant, and that's just one of those small things you get to do as commissioners, support some of these collaborative efforts of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, which is every county, municipality, and port, and some of the special districts and all up and down the coast of Oregon from the mouth of the Columbia all the way down to the California border. That group represents all those communities and governmental entities, including some of the tribes, and it's just going to be a really neat collaboration if we can manage to get that thing done. So happy to bring that to the board for their approval and get their approval so I could sign as chair that grant application. So we got about 12 minutes left here in the Bo's Know Show. Why don't you give us a call at 646-721-9887 and get in on the conversation here. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. If we don't get talking about what you want to talk about, I may start talking about other things, like some of the other things we've used our video lottery funds for over the years. As I look at my list, and it reminds me of some of the things we did, some of these things may seem relatively minor, but at the time we did them, back in 2013, when our unemployment rate was hovering around 7%, they were pretty meaningful to keep some of these jobs in Lane County. There's a company called Appel that was in Springfield, and Appel does aluminum extrusion and builds, for very specialized pieces of manufacturing. They're one of these parts makers that ends up in things you might recognize later on as a consumer. They outgrew their facility in Springfield and were looking to relocate, and they were looking at going to Arizona, and Arizona was offering them some pretty good incentives to go there, and we managed to work with a developer, Steve Lee, who took over a defunct motorhome manufacturing facility up there in Coburg, and with some help from Lane County in the form of economic development money of $100,000, we paid for bringing the three-phase 480 volt power to their site that they needed for their aluminum welding equipment. That's what that paid for, because then if for some reason they were closed down and leave, the site would still have that heavy-duty electrical service that wasn't there before. And they stayed in Lane County. And that was 85 jobs and high-paying jobs that stayed in Lane County at that time. So that's just, one of the pieces we use that economic development video lottery money for. And then, just another little piece that we've used that for, speaking of another job retention where we were keeping a Lane County company in Lane County, with Pacific Headwear, where we helped them fund some of their equipment expansion and relocation also up to Coburg to a larger facility. But that was 125 jobs that stayed in Lane County. Rears Manufacturing, which is, they make ag equipment. And they also, we paid to do some, enhance their electric service, and they actually moved up to Coburg and expanded there. So there's quite a bit of work we've done with manufacturers to, you know, those high paying advanced manufacturing jobs. That was one of the sectors I talked about that we're concentrating on. Traded sector, as we like to talk about. And by traded sector, I don't mean stock traded. I mean, it's goods that are manufactured and then traded outside of our community and could be traded internationally. Don't necessarily have to be when we support it, but it has potential to be. So when we start, you know, talking about the ag industry, that's considered a traded sector. You know, saw in the paper today, hazelnuts can be sold overseas. That's the work that Appel's doing with some of their aluminum extrusion. Those parts can be sold overseas, and are definitely not just sold here in Lane County. So they're bringing wealth into the county. I'd like to think that, you know, our support of Oakshire Brewing is bringing wealth into Lane County, because they're definitely selling their beer outside of Lane County. And Ninkasi is probably the greatest example of a food manufacturer that blossomed here in Lane County and is now national in sales, and probably hard to almost describe them as a microbrewery anymore. Just a few things we've been doing with our money. One of the things that probably doesn't quite fit the traded sector, but definitely meant a lot of jobs at a time when jobs were scarce, was the support we gave to First Call Resolution out in Bonita. And of course, you know, Bonita, another rural community that was suffering greatly after the 2008 recession, we brought 300 jobs into Bonita in 2013. And First Call is not your typical call center. They start their wages out, at the time it was a couple dollars above minimum wage. And if you're there for more than 6 months, they bring in medical and health insurance benefits, you know, and full benefits. So really, really a unique employer. And we helped, that was another case where we helped bring fiber into a community. So even if First Call had left after a while and wasn't successful, that fiber infrastructure that we paid for with the video lottery money would have still been out in Bonita, and maybe some other business could have taken advantage of that. So that's really really what we're about with that video lottery money. Quite often we try and do things that purchase equipment, capital goods, not necessarily just hand the business some money. It's really what we're looking to do is stuff that's going to stay right here in Lane County.
Now, can I jump in there for a second?
Sure, Robin.
Okay. I have a rant.
Okay. I love it when you have a rant. This is kind of, are you going to channel Bill London for a minute?
Yeah. I was thinking about maybe we should do a new segment on the program called The Drunken Architect of Eugene.
Yeah.
And like what we used to do on Oregon Update, you know, we'd give the What the Heck Are They Thinking Award to various agencies and whatever for coming up with the stupidest ideas. Well, my rant today is I went down Franklin Boulevard for the first time since going from Eugene to Springfield, since they've kind of laughingly remodeled it. And I heard that there was a roundabout in there, but I'll be darned if I was expecting a figure eight.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, it's a pair of roundabouts and some teardrop sort of shaped things and diversions around those teardrops. And, oh, my God. I can't quite figure it out. I haven't been At least I've only been down there when they've been constructing it. So I haven't, they've had traffic going all over the place in different pieces of that. But when that gets, at least from what I could see from where the curbs have been laid out and all that, wow, that's, you know, like somebody dropped some spaghetti on the drawings. And they started constructing from the stained drawing or something. I don't know. That one is the drunken road engineer or something. That kind of does get the drunken architect. Between that and Sixth Avenue and the lanes that, that disappear and shift one way and then shift back the other and everything. I would. That's right up there.
Yeah. Speaking of Sixth Street, if you don't hit the proper lane when you first get to it, whether you're on the right side or the left side, your lane's going to end.
Yep. Yeah, you got to be right in the correct lane, or you're going to be merging somewhere, and the merges aren't well marked. They just kind of all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, my lane's done, or oh my gosh, my lane's a turn only lane, and no one's going to let me out of it.
Exactly. Maybe it's a ploy to get more people into McDonald's. I don't know.
Yeah, down there before Garfield.
But when I saw that, and again doing the figure eight, and then seeing the little off ramp type things they got, and just like, what the heck are you guys thinking?
What was it? Did they have it fully open to traffic when you went through, or was it still partially closed up?
It was kind of open. I mean, there's still a lot of construction going through there.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out where they're going to send the EMX through or the bus or whatever. Then of course you got some random pedestrian crossings that you got to watch for, which like if people are familiar at all with Eugene Springfield and Hayden Bridge or Harlow Road, excuse me, over there at, as my mind goes south for the winter, Pioneer Pacific.
Yeah.
And it used to be 3rd and 4th Street, a lot easier to remember. Anyway, trying to navigate that roundabout, and then they figured, oh, we need to put a pedestrian crosswalk in there. Oops. And I noticed they still have the camera up there to record all the accidents that happened in that little circle.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't
either. Love affair with the roundabout.
They're only practical if you use the ones like they use in England. So they're large.
In Washington, D.C. is the same way. They're large circles.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that gives you enough time between each intersection to switch lanes and everything else and make your movements.
There's a reason behind why it's that way in D.C. is because everybody's walking in circles anyways.
Yeah. Well, L'Enfant decided to design it that way. What happens when you let a Frenchman design your city.
But the other thing, speaking as a former truck driver, when I was over the road, we actually came off an off-ramp and right into two roundabouts. Now, I have a 53-foot rig, tractor-trailer, and that was fun enough as it is, you know, and you hope that there's nobody beside you, but try it with a set of doubles.
Wow. Yeah.
And then they come up with these crazy designs. I mean, even Sixth Street with that little wobbly thing, you know, you got to watch out because, truck may be, you know, sliding over a little bit because he's longer than the little road.
And there is a lot of truck traffic on that road. Yeah, well, and there's a lot of trucking terminals and freight movement along that roadway, and I see a lot of trucks trying to merge on that road because they come off of the Washington Jefferson Bridge there in one of the right-hand lanes, and they need to get over to the left side of the road to go up Garfield or at least be in the left lane. So, yeah, the drunken architects of Eugene have been at it.
There we go.
I hear music in the background, which means we must be pretty close to the close of another Bo's Nose show. And I appreciate everybody listening. Hope you might have learned something about ag today and Lane County and how important agriculture is to Lane County. Hope to hear from you next time we're on the Bose Nose Show. Might have to move next week's show around a bit because there's some conflicting meetings. So keep an eye on Facebook. And don't forget to like us on Facebook at KRBN Internet News Talk Radio page. Thank you for listening, and hope you have a great week.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.